This is episode 151 of the Gold Squadron podcast. I'm your host, Dion Morales, and today I'm joined by Marcel Sleepy Manzano.
Hey, I'm actually waking up now. I was sleeping when I was typing the notes.
Will, you're essential to me, Hagwood.
I love you all. Stay safe.
And Ryan, Clone Wars hyped, Stanazuski.
Yeah, that was a really good last episode. Go watch it, people. Catch up on everything Clone Wars. It's so worth it.
Agreed. That's all I can say, right? Because no spoilers here. All right. So today is all about the Space Jam event and Tabletop Simulator. Now, I'm going to be very forward. I know there's some of you guys who only ever listen to the podcast and never watch the podcast. I will tell you that today is going to be very visual oriented because we're going to talk about how to we're going to answer a lot of the questions that people have on, like, how do you do X, Y, or Z in TTS, and can you show us that, and can you demonstrate that? We're doing that today. We're taking the opportunity to do it. I have already made a bunch of instructional videos, made five, some specifically about the event, but some people have some more detailed questions that we will answer, we'll discuss. We'll also leave it open to the chat and see what questions they might have. And yeah, so that's the plan for today. So I'm sorry, and we'll return to a more audio-friendly content for next week. I mean, we're going to be talking about the results of the Space Jam next week. That's what we'll be doing. So, and I would like to get a little bit of extended meta talk and from us maybe a little bit later. I know it's not in the notes, guys, but that's just kind of throw that out there. Like, hey, what might we expect out there? What might prevail with this kind of limbo that we're in right now with no events being played for a while? But so Space Jam updates, if you haven't finished all of your registration, which there are five of you, okay? Now, I'm not publicly putting out names because I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I will tell you that I have emailed everybody, okay? Mind you, I've emailed you from the email that you placed your order, like you bought your ticket with, all right? So if that was like a dummy email, you're going to be a little bit out of luck because that was the way I was able to communicate with you. Also, if you're participating in the event, I also emailed out a request for your Discord name. I realized in the initial sign-up, I didn't ask for that. I asked for what is your name on Tabletop TO, like where you have the pairings and all that, but I never asked what was your Discord name, which is Discord is the main way we're communicating. One of the biggest things I've learned from this, guys, is that people don't read. A lot of people don't read. It's frustrating. It's like being a teacher. Ah, I've done that before, man.
Did Ryan Farmer not warn you with the Jank Tank open? Did you not see everything he was going through?
It's like I made pictures and diagrams. There's videos. Well, see now I have to be the bad guy, is right? Because these five people, okay? These five people, like, I'm having no mercy on them. The deadline comes, they're dropped from the tournament, and we're letting in five people from the wait list. And if those five people don't get it together, I'm just the wait list has 40 people on it right now. All right? I will find five people on that list who can read. All right? So yeah, I'm a lot of people might expect Dion to be a little bit soft and be like, "That's okay, guys. We'll get it figured out." No. Not for this. Ain't nobody got time for that. If you didn't follow the directions, you're out. If you don't put your list in time, you're out. There's people who will cover it, and like I said everywhere, no refunds. So I'm trying to motivate you with your money. Don't lose your money. Please. All right.
This is like harsh business teacher Dion here.
This is right. I had to. Like, at first, like, I was discussing with my wife and like, should I like be nice and like help him out? And she looked at me, she goes, You're gonna stay up till like 4 o'clock in the morning tracking people down all the way to like the minute the event starts. I was like, I don't wanna do. She goes, don't. I'm like, you're right.
You're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is that's the plan right now. And a couple of people also did ask, and we're reiterating from last time, are we going to do more of these? Yes, we're going to plan. The plan is to do three others. The prize pool might change a little bit just because of availability of things that I have on hand. But the we will end up with four champions, and I want to do a showdown with those four champions. So that's the plan there. So we're jumping right into your guys' questions here. Now, my co-hosts, even if we're just going to go in order, or if you feel like picking out a question there, make sure you highlight the one that you're answering, and I'll be the hands of the TTS here. So let's just I'll start, okay? Which this is one so a couple of easy ones. We'll start with some softballs. First question is what is the day two? What's your record need to be for the cut? We're just going to do top 16, regardless of record, top 16. And originally, I had it as, like, I hadn't published it, but mentally, I was going to do the system open version. But because I made top 16 prizes, I was like, well, let's try to get people playing. I think that was really what I was looking for. So, yeah, if you make the top 16, you're in to day two. Now, here is an opportunity for discussion with you three, because you guys are actually playing in the event. I'm obviously running the show behind the curtains here. One of the questions was, on game day, if it is apparent that the opponent that you're playing or the person you're playing is unfamiliar with TTS and didn't watch any of the instructional videos that I handed out, should they flag a judge, and what should be the expected consequence? So, I think, yes, you should flag a judge. If it's like stopping the game, like if you can't play and you're not being able to get like at least a little bit of a flow of the game, that's probably going to be a problem. What are your guys' thoughts?
This is a tough one, because we do obviously want, you know, people of all skill levels joining in, but it is a regulated tournament.
Yep.
with prizes and stuff. So I think I'm on the side that I don't know what the judge would do, but it's worth bringing up. Like, have you talked to them about what could be considered slow playing outside of the norm?
I'm working on a document right now to get them sent out. And this is one of the questions that I just kind of kept coming to. And it actually comes up again in our list of questions is, in this digital format, in a tournament, what is considered slow play? Like, my initial idea here was the person should be able to keep a consistent pace of play and be able to know how the mod functions, at least the basics, right? How do you get your list? How do you make the ships move? And how do you do actions and roll dice? Like, if you can do those things, if you don't know all the other complicated stuff, quote-unquote complicated, it's really not that complicated, but the outliers, the things that might be considered outliers, that's okay. But you need to be able to function in the in the mod with just the basics. I mean, I think that's fair, right? If somebody is not doing that, if they're like, oh, how do I get my ship to move? That's a red flag. What would happen? Most likely what I would end up doing, I mean, if it's a consistent problem and they, I guess, are they like DQ'd from the tournament? You can play for funsies, but you're out. Like, you're not eligible for prizes or something like that. Like, what do you think, Marcel?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one. Because I mean, slow plays, you know, there's people play slow just because they play slow, but people play slow because they have technical issues and they're not. So it's kind of hard to say. I think it's going to be harder in the first couple rounds, just because we don't know what you know, the D and Mike, they're not going to know like what to expect. mm-hmm. right? Usually when people are saying slow play, you go and you sit there for a while and you look at it. But judges already know, like, ahead of time, like, okay, I kind of know how long it takes to set dials. I kind of know how long it takes to move around. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it, you know, they don't know. I mean, they, especially if they're just staring at a screen at home and they're seeing no movement for 5 minutes, those 5 minutes on the screen appear much longer than those 5 minutes sitting some, you know, standing next to someone at a table. Mm-hmm. So the appearance of slow play might be more. And while you guys were talking about it, I was like just thinking in my head, and I guess the short answer is I don't know. You know, if you have an issue with it, call it early. I think the right thing to do for the judges would be, if they're hearing about slow play when there's like 5 minutes left in the round, mm-hmm. too bad. Deal with it. I mean, at that point, like, what are you going to do? Like, oh, he's been slow playing for the last hour. Well, why didn't you say something an hour ago?
Yeah.
So if you think your opponent is either slow playing, or you recognize that your opponent is really struggling with, and that happened to me actually a couple days ago, where my opponent was just new to Tabletop Simulator, and every time they would click a button, they would click the wrong button, and they would move and undo, and every round took twice as long as it should because they were still learning the system. But I was able to recognize that that was happening in the first, you know, two turns.
Yeah.
So, long story short, don't wait till the end. If you think you got an issue, call it out in the first 5 minutes, in the first couple moves.
Right. And we did recommend in the documentation, like, I would say it takes about, when we talked about it last week too, it takes about 3 to 5 games to feel really, really good about it. You're like, all right, I understand how to move ships. And you get it gradually. Like, if you haven't taken the time to learn the system and you signed up for the tournament, that was a bad call. Because it did say that you need, you know, the basic knowledge of how to use the system. And honestly, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, who it is. I know that you guys, like really, like, I'll tell you, I have some locals that for a long time, they didn't have their stuff together. And I wasn't giving them extra help. I was like, listen, everybody, you got the email just like everybody else. Read. You got to read. So making sure just that we are, we're going to try to find a nice baseline. And somebody said it in the chat. I think by round two, we're going to find the people who are struggling, or at least most of them, pretty quickly. So we'll find out, you know, who has, who, you know, the myriad of issues. And this is the wild card, right? There's no way to know how 148 people playing at the same time was going to work until you do 148 people playing at the same time. But there was no way. Anyway, those are our two easy questions, maybe? I don't know. So slow play question is weird. All right, Ryan, pick one. Pick one out of the list. Just let me know what number it is.
Just go to the next one down, make it easy. Question about the basic event, waitlist status or expanding the field. We will not be expanding the field. As Dio mentioned before, there are 5 people who have not completed steps of registration. He is laying the smackdown on thee. So follow along or be subject to being replaced by the waitlist.
Mm-hmm. Will, go ahead.
I'll take the next one down. Let's go in order here. Seem to be related for the most part. So this one says, this is from Wookiee Shepherd. When I played Tabletop Simulator yesterday, my opponent and I discovered that the maneuver dials have been changed. They have been updated. Check them out. They should work better. But Wookiee Shepherd here says, however, they would not consistently open for either one of us and delayed a lot of game time just trying to open the move icon to select a maneuver. Has this been an experience of others? And how do you, but the main question is, how do we address loss of game time to systems issues like that? I will say from my personal experience, the dials have been way better. No more flickering, try to get the views or the arcs the views. Trying to get the arcs to show on tabletop, so I think the dials, in my experience, have been better. What do you guys think?
Yeah, so one of the things that I've seen, like, once in a while, if you flip it, the face might be missing. Honestly, I've just, what I did, I just flipped it down and flipped it back up, and it was fine. That's it.
Yeah, quick thing is just to copy and paste and then delete the old dial. Mm-hmm. It's the old turn it off and turn it back on trick.
Yep, and it has worked for me every time. I have not had a situation where that hasn't worked. So yeah, I mean, it's, and this is also going to be one of those case by case basis, right? Like if something is really, really broken, first you got to make sure that you're, and this is just an expectation for the event. If your X-Wing mod isn't up to date, that's not on us, right? That's on you as the player. You either unsubscribed to the, which I realized the other day I had accidentally done on my laptop, because I was trying to teach people, I was making a video on like how to install TTS, and I had already had it installed, and I like pretended, quote unquote, to press the subscribe button, but it unsubscribed me, right? So I had to go back, make sure you're subscribed, and it automatically does its updates. Yeah, so that's there. I mean, if anything too crazy, honestly, just needs to be brought up and you say, what do we do? And we'll figure it out on a case-by-case basis, because there's no perfect solution. Nobody's ever done this before, what we're doing. It's kind of crazy. I'm excited and terrified all at the same time. All right, Marcel.
All right, next question is, do we have to use the same obstacles for each round? Short answer is yes. Slightly not as short answer, but not still short answer is yes, and make sure that you upload it to the tabletop TO when you create your list in YASB. Select your obstacles in YASB, enter your list in tabletop organizer, and then check your list and make sure that the obstacles are the obstacles. When you go down tabletop, the obstacles show up as images, so you have your full list, and then you have the images of the obstacles that are there. So that way your opponent, you know, you can verify your opponent's debris or clouds or obstacles, whatever they are.
So I'm going to go ahead and go over to TTS to kind of give a couple of examples of how you could do it. Because people are asking, well, can you like save your squad? And yes, you can save your squad. But here was when I was talking to the developers. I was talking to Crazy Vulcan, also talking to Cheese, who are the two main guys, or two of the main guys. They basically said, you know, like there's going to be a window, like a 24-hour window before our event, where no updates are going to be happening to TTS, where they're just going to leave it alone. And what that will allow you to do is actually save your squad in your saved objects, and this can include, or should include, excuse me, your obstacles. So let's just show really quickly how to do that. Okay, so whatever your obstacles are, and again, they need to match what's on tabletop TO. We don't want this to become an issue when we get to, you know, the cut, and you made the cut, and all of a sudden, you know, your obstacles are wrong. Okay? So you go ahead, you highlight everything. You can go ahead, right click, save object. Okay, you can name it whatever you want. So it should be, you know, my squad with rocks. You press save. We're going to just go ahead, delete it. And you'll find it in your saved objects. You press objects, saved objects. And there it is. Everything. Now, normally, you should actually spawn it not in the middle of the board. Go ahead, put it in the bottom. But yeah, there's everything. All the ships, the cards, my colored markers, todito. Everything nice, beautiful, ready to play. And that took me all of a couple seconds to spawn. Again, but this saved objects set should only be done within that 24-hour window before we start. Otherwise, things can go crazy, because like when I was talking to the guys about it, they're saying, you know, sometimes, you know, we're messing with code, and if people have had objects that are saved for a long time and we've edited something, things just break, right? Things just break. So just be mindful of that. All right.
Dion, actually, before we move on real quick, because I ran into this as a thing I didn't notice. Can you right-click again over top? Because there's one thing to note, if you right-click and go to Save Object on your objects or whatever you select. So those little darker gray bars can be collapsible. So if you don't immediately see the save objects on there. So if you hit the bar between custom and toggles real quick.
Yep. Sorry. Hit the wrong thing. Right there.
So you might have this window pop up and be like, where's my save objects? Just make sure you have them all shown in your right click menu. Yeah.
So, you know, I had actually some, that's a question from somebody. This is probably what they were talking about. Like, I can't see anything in my menu. That just means that you accidentally click those expand and retract menus. Cool. All right, let's move on to our next question. Gonna have to go and bam, bam. All right, let's pull up the list. So next question. Kind of similar to something we've already hit here. This comes from Alan, and he asks, what will be the protocol for an individual with individual player internet ISP issues, meaning one player's internet experiencing connectivity or lag problems? What will happen if the player gets disconnected? So if disconnects might happen, like that is just a thing that can happen on TTS. We actually made a video. Okay. We made a video explaining like the autosave function that fits. I actually discovered that you can, increase how often at it automatically saves at every 5 minutes, but you can make it sooner. I wouldn't recommend doing it like every second because it can like slow down your system if your system can't handle saving that often, but you could lower it to something like a minute or something like that, maybe a minute and a half. Minute and a half probably better than a minute, but you have that option. You can also manually save the game state, and one of the suggestions, if you were really worried about getting disconnected and like what happens if and this was the big question, what happens if you have a disconnect while you're in the middle of activation? There's some ships that haven't flipped yet. We reinstate the game, and now the dials are blank because that's what happens when you reload the game. I'm not going to read it all. There's a whole list of that. Like I did a document and everything explaining the plan. Read it. Watch the video. The link to all of this is going to be put in the description later on. That's that. Now, for an individual internet issue, that's, again, something that's going to default to like individual decisions. And here's one reality. Here's one of the realities is if you are the cause of an issue and you know, right, you're like, okay, I've realized after playing one game, let's call worst case scenario, I have no idea what's going on Tabletop Simulator. My internet is terrible, and my computer, barely turns on to get this game going. I think in the name of not wasting people's time, okay, you should probably withdraw yourself from the event. All right, and I know there were some people who said I didn't sign up because I wasn't confident in my internet, X, Y, and Z. You're right. That probably was the right decision for those people. But if you know that you're the cause of an issue, you might need to take a step back. Like, we can still have you play some games. Like, that's fine. You still get your participation prize and all that. But our biggest thing is we want to be respectful of people's time. There's going to be 148 people at home. We know that there might be distractions already, or they got other stuff going on. They may have asked their significant other, hey, is it okay if I sit at my computer for 8 hours on this day and play X-Wing? We want to make sure that we are trying to keep that time schedule that we have on the event. Yeah.
You're being very optimistic with 8 hours.
I made a schedule. It's more than 8 hours. I think it's slightly more than 8 hours. What's my time? Let me go look at it real quick.
Yeah.
Well, let's say
11 hours.
While you're razzing me, let me go and look at what I put up.
While you're checking that, I'll just jump to the next question.
Oh, yeah. So I said starting at 9:20 is pairings and check-in, and then I want to be done at 8:20. 11 hours.
Oh.
Yeah. I did the math at one point.
See, I did the math in my head in, what was that, like 15 seconds.
Well, obviously I'm not as smart as you, am I? It's just the truth. It's all right. Hey, you called it. All right, Marcel, what's our next question, man?
The next question actually is for you because that's a streaming question, so I'll go to the one right after that. Drop the rigged cargo chute. How do you drop a rigged cargo chute? And you actually dropped a rigged cargo chute similar to the way that you drop a bomb. So I think you've got the there, so you can just show it on that. But it's similar to the way that you
we'll grab this X-wing.
Yeah.
So the rigged cargo chute, when you spawn it, it like if your pilot has it, it doesn't come with a bomb dropper. So you need to grab a bomb dropper. You assign it to your ship by dropping it on there. And now it gives you options, right? So, I'm not a player right now. Hold on, forgot to do that. Boop. There you go. Let me try this one more time. So it faces the right way. Okay. So we're going to drop bomb. And we're going to do one straight out the back. The template shows up there automatically. You grab your rig cargo chute, which is part of the mines. So you just grab the mines and you cycle through with your number keys. And you just drop it on there. And it puts it exactly where it goes, and the template disappears. And then this, you don't need it anymore. You can just get rid of it. Pretty easy peasy, lemon squeezy. What's the next question? Will.
We're going to skip down past that red one there. I don't know what that's about, but we're going to skip down right below to the other one.
All right.
This is one of the questions I had. I don't know who asked it. It might have been me.
Mm-hmm.
It says, are we allowed to use dice buttons or dice rollers? If there is an acceptable one, which one?
That's a great question. So, yes, you can use them if your opponent agrees, and if your opponent wants to use it, they get to use it too. That's it. Super simple. Just as if you brought, like, whose dice are we going to use? Same idea. The only exception would be if you're playing on stream, you're going to use the normal dice. Just because the dice rollers do, you know, they don't, you can't keep them in the same place for streaming.
So since we're on the topic of dice, I got a request for Crazy Vulcan, genius mind over there. Dice app.
What?
I want a big cell phone screen.
Oh my God.
And a dice app dice. On here.
You want electronic dice in an electronic format.
Exactly.
Inception.
Diceception, baby. Oh my God. No. No. Crazy Vulcan, no. Don't do it. Don't do it. Nobody wants it. Well, maybe some people want it.
It would be the actual simulation of life.
Of 42.
I see what you mean. Marcel, it's a Crazy Vulcan says, grab a tablet object and log in. God forgive me for this info. You can build what you want, man. Build what you want. Anyway, so answering that dice roller question, yes, you can, with those caveats. Pretty simple there. All right. Next. Take it, Ryan. Whichever one you want.
Line 12. How will Dione determine who will be streamed? As per the usual, Dione likes cool lists or unknown archetypes that are doing well, but sometimes it can be random. And also, I assume, fun interactions between known players, like we had at Crossroads, between the crazy game that Zach Bart and Sarah Tessum had that were just for fun. They weren't doing anything crazy in terms of like in the standings, but it was ridiculous and fun time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, so it's the round one will be kind of random. I am going to have so you guys know, like, we have people working for this, right? So I've hired 5 people to help me run this on top of myself. I think it's 5. No, 4. 4 people. And one of them, his job is to scout out pairings and look at lists and see what's doing good and do that kind of stuff. So that should be pretty fun. We're going to have a lot of lists, and we'll hit later, hopefully we have time to what's this meta even going to be. I'll go ahead and take the next one, the one that we skipped here. Will you stream 2 games at once on either table? So in Tabletop Simulator, as you guys have seen already, it shows 2 tables, right? There's one right next to each other, and the answer is no, and I will give you the reason why. We're going to stream only 1 game at once is because we have a dice box that will be used on the table, similar to when we stream in person, and that is placed on the other table. So there is no actual space to have another game, unless they, you know, one day, if they made space for the dice box on both sides, okay? If they made a dice box, you know, if they made like an expanded streaming table, which could be cool, but yeah. Not for the Space Jam. Next question. Who's next? Marcel, I think.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm going to take line 27. It's a pretty simple question. It says, how do you slam? So there isn't any actual slam. So how you slam is just you just flip the dial and you call it out first to your opponent. You flip the dial and you set the maneuver that you're going to slam. And you just, you know, reset the dial and then do the thing again. So yeah, so exactly what he's doing there on the screen. You move once and then you flip the dial, you change the dial to whatever else you want, and you move again. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward.
Yep. Will?
I lost my number here. But I think like we're going to expand on that as well. So this would be 11.
All right, cool.
But it's going to be the second part of 11. Jason Miller asks, how do you accomplish maneuvers like IG-88Ds, odd sloops, slams, and other maneuvers that happen after you reel your dial? I thought they fixed Arvel as well with the new dials, but this also applies for Daredevil. Let's see. Joan, you can pull up your little notebook, can't you?
My notebook.
All these are actually in Tabletop Simulator. If you want to pull up the notebook, and it should be in movement. If you scroll down a little bit, you can start seeing examples of all these maneuvers. So you want to do an IG-88 3 hard talon. It should be in there. All right, no, it wouldn't be a talon, would it? It'd still be a sloop.
So yeah, so you take the parts of each one. I actually was practicing it earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
So you would right-click, you have this description box. So let's go ahead and do the right, you know, sloop here. So you would reveal the sloop if you were that IG that lets you sloop on a hard turn or the straight maneuver. And you would, let's see. So you have a hard turn. So we're going to turn right. So that's BR, right? BR. And then you take the speed, which is the number, and then you need to go ahead and make it a Segnor's loop, right, to the left.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to go ahead and make it an S. And then you click off. Oh, nope, I broke it. I broke it.
Oh, it really does not like that.
They may have put in the wrong code. I just did this earlier.
Rotating error. Rotating error.
It doesn't understand. It doesn't understand the IG sloops. In that instance,
do a hard three rotate.
If that doesn't work, just hard three rotate 180 degrees, which should be in there as well. But let's do something a little bit simpler if it will let you.
I don't know, Vulcan saying kill it, reload.
Yeah, kill it. something easier is, say, you're doing the Daredevil hard one. That's T for turn. Right for going right. And then one for the speed of that Daredevil boost. That's how you can do things. I wouldn't recommend it like on slam, because you do need to make sure that maneuver is on your dial. But for things like maybe Boba Fett. What was the other thing examples they had? That would not be on your dial. That would be, I'm trying to think here.
Some people might not be aware, but like an ion one straight for a ship that doesn't have a one straight, you can just put the ion token on the ship and it should prompt you to do the one straight even without needing the dial.
Oh, that's true. The ion tokens do have that. I'm thinking of Ved Foslow. That's who I was thinking of. Ved Foslow can do a hard one, but it's not on his dial. So that'd be another thing you could use. That T for turn, R for right, and one for its speed in the description.
All of count as Riot's K turns.
That's true. Also not on her dial.
So yeah, any of those, you're going to want to go ahead and use the numbers there. And I think if you're using those pilots, take some time, look up the chart, go ahead, go through the notebook and go through it. All right.
Yeah, and once again, all of this codes and information is inside of the mod, inside of the notebook. You can read the notebook a little bit, check it out. It's got way more information than most players will ever need. But it's, all the cheat codes are in there.
I like that. All the cheat codes are in there. All right, let's go ahead and hit the next one.
All right, so if you don't mind, I'm going to do two quick how do you two for ones. So line 10, how do you easily measure for range one spacing for obstacles during setup? Unfortunately, right now, there's not an easy way other than just utilizing the digital version of the range one template. But they are working on creating a bubble, but it's not currently ready at this time. I guess we'll monitor the chat to see if Crazy Vulcan has any updates that before this weekend.
I know he was working on it, and the challenge there, right, is because they're not evenly spaced. Like, you got to vector out that whole from every single obstacle, and there's a bunch of obstacles now. So it's a lot. So
yep.
Soon, probably not before Space Jam, I would think. Just okay. With the sheer amount of work that needs to go into it.
Line 14, also dealing with some measurement stuff. To measure your arc without the arc triangle, when it says which ranges the ships are in for automatic purposes, you can right-click and click Fire Arc Front or whichever arc is applicable. And it will give you the little measuring stick automatically and showing the range.
Cool. And it's back to me. Sorry, I'm trying to do a bunch of things in the background here. Cool. So, all right. The next one was two questions in one. The first question I think we talked about. How do you reset your TTS right-click window? We already talked about that you have a collapsed like those lines are collapsed, so go ahead and hit those gray lines and they should pop open. This question comes from from Charles Fletcher. And two is, how do you customize slash name the colors of your ships so that you know which one is which, if you have a swarm or something like that? So as you saw already with my example, we have these color-coded. I did a whole video on them. Essentially, there's a couple different ways to do it. I know that the guys, the mods, are actually working – or sorry, the devs are working on a way to do this faster than the way I did it. But I did show a way on how to use these markers, how to install them and put them into your TTS, and how to tint all these. Again, it's about a five-minute video. Go through it. But just the biggest part is when you find the objects in your in the links, when I say like, all right, so here you can subscribe to this in order to get the objects, they'll actually show up in games, okay? They'll show up in games, and you want to go ahead and you can just, if I'm not mistaken, you can just go ahead and you expand them, right? You press expand, and here are all the individual pieces, and you just drop them onto the board as you need them. And again, color coding should be done before the event. All right, this is not during round one, this is round zero. You're getting this ready for you. Yeah, and all the videos are on our YouTube channel, by the way, and the links to all of those are in, like, there's a set of five, which I think I actually pulled up the page for that somewhere here. There it is. Okay, there's five of them. How to color code your ships and save your squad in TTS, starting and ending each round instructions, how to create and join a TTS room, how to put back a deleted ship, which is a really common question, and what do you do if TTS crashes during Space Jam. Like, I have made those five videos. They're up on YouTube, and the links to all of them to each other are in the description. I'm trying to scroll from the wrong window. Right here. Bam. Everything. So go ahead and watch that. All right, what's next, guys?
All right, I got a. I'll do a couple real quick because this one's a fast one.
Yeah.
Nate Moore wants to know: have I submitted all the needed documents for the in the correct format, and am I good to go for this, or do I need anything else? Are you not going to steal my $20? Short answer is: if you're in tabletop TO and your list is showing up, you're in.
Yep.
That's all you need to know, that you're registered and everything is up to date. But before the tournament starts, at some point you're going to have to go through that process of putting your list, saving your list, and just being ready. It's the same thing if you go to a tournament. Just because you paid and you registered doesn't mean you're ready to play. You still need to take out your list and have your list in a format that you can take table to table and set up quickly. So that's the first question. And the second one was, change the logo background on your dial. That was just the question. I think it's, how do you change the logo background on your dial? I this is actually, I'm going to switch this question around a little bit, and this is more of a question to you, Dion, as the main organizer. Is like, my perspective, what I would prefer to see, especially for those of us with pointy aluminum hats, like, I want to see my stuff and my opponent's stuff as vanilla as possible. So I don't want to see any special mods. I don't want to see any special ships. I don't want to see any special dials. Like vanilla, you know, it's just, normally on a real X-Wing table, I don't care as much. Like, you can bring all the unique templates and everything that you got from everywhere else. But in here, I'd much rather, like, not have to deal with any of that. Like, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
So
as far as like customized ships, customized logos, customized
my opinion is very similar to the tournament document. It's, I know that we are dealing with digital, and I would hope that somebody wouldn't like hack TTS and make some kind of weird thing. But I'm okay with like different, like, what do you call it? Like different paint jobs and stuff like that. I'm okay with that, like, because I know that that's something that a lot of people do, and actually Luke is working on showing how to do that. I would be I would be cautious about if anything that you're bringing into the game is not the doesn't function the way everything else does. So, for instance, if your dials, like the buttons or something like that, look different, that's a no-go. It needs to have the same layout as it has before, but you know, it's still the dial. If you're going to bring an X-Wing and it has different colors, that's fine, as long as it's still an X-Wing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want anything too crazy. And if your opponent has questions about it, that's okay. Like, they can, like, so Marcel, if you're going against somebody and you're concerned and you're like, you know, I feel like, I mean, let's be crazy. I don't know. I'm going to put my tin hat on too. You ready? Like, all right, this guy brought customized ships and, you know, when he does moves, it doesn't say that they bumped. Even though it looks like they bumped, right? Like, I don't know if that's even possible, but like those are the type of things I think that you're worried about. I would say if you see something weird, you just gotta say something. I know that's not a perfect solution, but we don't want to take away the creativity from the people who are just being creative. But at the same time, we obviously we don't want anybody being something they're not doing something they're not supposed to.
Yeah, that looks like what Jeremy's number 26 question is about. He calls them anthropomorphic, which I like Cars, the movie, but I believe he means like
what number?
Animated.
What number? 26.
Yes, is it possible to replace the in-game Starship models with anthropomorphic versions based on Dion? I was like, Cars? Like you're going to have Dion's head flying around? I understand that. But it sounds very related that your Dion ship will have to at least look like the ship you're basing it off of.
Ridiculous.
If your face was the ship, what do you think? Houndstooth? YB666.
I haven't decided. You know what? Let the people decide, and then maybe somebody who's really good at modding, they can make it happen. All right. We put it in your hands. How do you restore a deleted ship? Again, I made a whole video on it. The link is going to be in this doc. And here's the thing. I'm actually going to release this doc with all the links and answers that are on here. I'm going to take off people's names before we publish it. But all the answers will be there. Made a whole video on it. It's super easy. Very, very easy. So just just go through it. You got this. Essentially, it's a right-click function on the ships. It's a right-click function on the ships. You have to write restore, lowercase, restore, number sign, and then each ship is assigned a number once it starts moving around, and it will tell you in the chat box in TTS what number that ship is when it accidentally gets deleted. And you just put in the number, and it puts it right back. Very, very easy. Very easy. All right. What's next? Do we have anything else? Did we get them all? Did we cover? I know some of them are overlapping.
Questions still.
So I'll do line 30. Question: is there anything the TTS dev team can't do? The answer is directly from Crazy Vulcan. Yes, we are still limited by many things. Tabletop Simulator won't allow you to mod, but we will do our best to make anything you need happen. Crazy Vulcan says my door is as always open to ask questions/requests if you have them. P.S. No, we don't do Patreon or tip jar. Quit asking that. But they want to pay you. They want to give you their nice money to donate because they love you.
We
what
tried.
Can they donate to you if not Mooney?
Drinks, food, hand sanitizer.
Toilet paper,
yeah. Get a P.O. box, guys. We'll make sure you guys are taken care of. All right, I think, is this the answer for the system requirements there?
Should be, yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So somebody was asking about the recommended system requirements to best support TTS, and here is from the from Berserker Games, the people who make Tabletop Simulator. It says memory, 4 gigabytes of RAM, graphics with shader model graphics card. You need to have a graphics card with shader model 4.0 capabilities and network broadband internet connection. And guys, by the way, if you're playing in this tournament and you can have a wired internet connection, have a wired internet connection in your house if you can. I know some people don't have that option, but if you can, plug in the wire, and you want to have at least 3 gigabytes of available space to save all your stuff. Of course, if you got better specs than that, that's awesome. That'll just improve your quality of life. And you do have some options on TTS to actually make it run a little easier for your system. You can do that by going to menu, configurations, and right here where it has graphics, you can go ahead and, you know, change your resolution as need be for your monitor. You can just go like, all right, you know, I need the lowest quality just so that we can, you know, we can get what we can. You can also like, it does all kinds of things for you, like takes away the shadows and it all, you know, all the things. So, you know, whatever works for you, adjust for your computer and you should be good. All right. I think we got through the big ones. Again, I'm flipping back and forth, guys, so let me know if I'm wrong. Ah, okay. Amir asked a question here and asked, instead of spawning, so part of the setup, I had asked people to spawn a second copy of their list just in case they did delete something, so they have a second copy. They were asking if is it okay if we spawn a data disk. I'm just going to flat out just say no. Because I'm trying to eliminate as many variables as possible. Simply spawn the whole list, have it twice, have it on the other side of the table, and if you need it, you grab it, and if you don't, that's fine. All right? We don't want to, because I think even Crazy Vulcan was talking about the save to disk function isn't quite working, maybe up to par as it should or did. I don't know. I don't know the word I'm looking for. It's not working as goodly as our other solutions. So just go ahead and just load a second version of the squad. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So Crazy Vulcan saying it is getting better, right? But it's not quite there. Not quite there. How do you find the obstacles I picked if I forgot to what I picked during Space Jam? So, go ahead and somebody go ahead and take that one. That one's pretty easy.
Yeah, you can just log into your Tabletop TO account and go and find your parents. It should be fairly easy. And when you click on your own list, it will have the obstacles you selected. Now you can also do the same thing to your opponent. Check your opponent's list as normal in any tournament. And check the obstacles as well to make sure they're... I don't think it's even possible to put duplicates on there, but say they have two of the same rock or incorrect rocks, you can let them know of that error.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And right now, all the lists are hidden. I will, the day of the event, once everybody's ready to go, I'll unhide them, and then you'll be able to see everything really, really easily. All right, next question. Go ahead, take it, Ryan.
So there's also line 22 from Matt Stife. Mm-hmm. Stream giveaways. Is it okay if we watch the stream at the same time we play, or will that be frowned upon? Your response specifically, Dion, is you do not care as long as it doesn't affect your gameplay. Note the stream will purposely be on a longer than normal delay for this event. I would add a caveat that, I mean, I don't know how to police it, but you probably shouldn't be watching, have a stream of your game if you're on stream to listen to commentary you get like added tips from the commentators.
You are so good. So yeah, you transitioned into a couple of concerns and questions that aren't on here, but I actually was going to mention just at the event. So yes, if you are playing. Okay, if you are playing, again, there's no way to police it, but you shouldn't be watching the stream. Period, end of story. Like, that is just blatant cheating. If you want to be a cheater, sure, but you're being a jerk. Don't do it. The other question that comes in, and by the way, like, one of the things that will be obvious, because I am purposely putting it on a delay, like, if your pace of play is, like, awkwardly slow, like, it we'll be able to tell. We'll be like, hey, let's keep up the pace. We will call you on it. Again, anybody can be streamed because you agreed that's part of the terms of the tournament. Like, you're joining. I can stream you. No ifs, ands, or buts there. Second, no, you cannot stream your own games. And this is for the reason why people can't watch your games in TTS. Okay, there are no spectators for this tournament except for the one official stream game. You can feel free to record yourself; that's fine. But no other live streams at all. Okay, if you were discovered to be live streaming yourself, playing in this tournament live, you will be taken out of the tournament, and you're just done, okay? And this is because we don't want people having outside help. This is one of the things we can do to police that. Again, record yourself after, go crazy. Put it, you can put it wherever you want, publish it on YouTube, comment it on it later, commentate on it, that's fine. But live, it's a no-go. I mean, that's fair, right, guys? Like, I don't think that's too crazy.
Yeah, I would say, because most people are more familiar with Dione that goes around to tables and asks players if they'd like to be on stream, and they have the option to say no and you move on to the next. Is that still a thing, or do you actually say we're streaming your game, you have no say in the matter?
That's correct. For this event, I'm not gonna have time. I don't have time I can't use the words I want to. I can't. I can't. You've signed up, you're in. Done. If I say, all right, table 22, you're on stream, there's no questions about it.
Did Duncan Howard sign up?
He didn't. He's busy saving the world in Baltimore.
That's very true. Yeah. True. I was going to say, he is a known stream dodger.
Though, I've gotten him now like 3 or 4 times. I think he's gotten used to it.
He had to. He was in the finals for a couple of them. And on top of the last thing you mentioned, so I know getting your obstacles going to TTO, I think it actually be a really good habit that during the event, you always have a internet browser open with your list in Yasby, with the event open link immediately, and Discord open and ready to, I mean, you're going to have it open to talk.
Yeah, that's not recommended, Ryan. That's required. All that that's required.
Okay. I didn't know that it was already required to have like that stuff up all the time on hand, but mm-hmm. Yes, always have things like treat tabletop as like you're in the store. Like you can't not be in the store. And then obviously your list should always be on hand. And if you can, like if your opponent has a list, you probably should share the link with each other.
So
you could each have each other's list up instead of having to build it. Just share your link.
Look at that. Look at that. It's perfect. It's perfect. Absolutely perfect. So now the last question here comes from Davin Felth, which that name will pop up again later because he actually asked a really good question of the week that we're going to hit here. It says, if you can make a custom dial for TTS, what would be on it? For myself, I think it'd be cool to have some like the GSP helmet on some of those custom dial X-Wing dials for TTS. I think that'd be cool. What would you want on there, Ryan?
Specifically well-known faction ships? I don't know. Like
that could be cool.
A dial of vultures everywhere. Cool.
Will?
Just funny memes. give me the one where the dog's sitting in the burning house. Give me all those
this
things.
Is fine. I'm in.
Yeah, exactly.
What about you, Marcel?
I'd probably go with like some of the dial covers that have been given for prize tournaments, like the world's dial covers or dial covers from Gen Con and stuff like that.
That's cool. All right, here's a curveball for you guys, a question that is related to all this, but at the same time not. What is one thing about the TTS mod that you wish was different? Something that maybe a feature that either doesn't exist or is one way and you wish it was another?
For me, it's an easy one to answer for me.
Okay.
So it goes back to the how do you slam. For me, the thing that I would love to have is some type of easier shortcut to where, you know, on Vassal, you can just highlight your ship and do, you know, Control Shift 2 to do a hard 2. Mm-hmm. So something like that, like a easier shortcut command to do maneuvers and barrel rolls and things like that without having to, you know, go into the right click and then go down and type RT2 or whatever. Just something easier.
Mm-hmm. Will?
That's a good question.
You want me to come back to you?
Yeah, come back to me.
Ryan, you got anything?
Ryan's got one.
Yeah, I mean, I know it was already mentioned earlier, but the range band of obstacles, instead of having to try and figure that out on a more manual basis, you know, have that overlay opacity of the range band of range 1, range 2, range 3. Because I've noticed I commonly put obstacles at like range 1.5 to 2. Mm-hmm. And there's some cases where I'm kind of particular with actually where that is, whether it works out in game, you know, I find out later, but,
right.
Seeing the whole range band, like you do on Vassal all the way out, I do like seeing, cause there's also the strategy of, putting it, range 3 from opposing board deployment and mm-hmm. range 2 from their board edge in that corner, helps block, a 3-bank opening for a swarm block.
Good point. Will, you got your you got yours?
Remind me if this works or not. Can you right click and or excuse me, can you left click and give someone a token? And then if you right click that same symbol, does that take that token away?
No. Takes a focus. No, it just gives him another one.
If you right click it, okay. That's what I thought. I thought.
I guess somebody says for stress it does.
Here, for stress it does.
Let's experiment.
Try with stress.
Here we go. Let me get the ship like not in that area. There you go.
Not directly in the way.
Right click, left click. Oh hey, let's see strain.
Okay.
Oh, the works for strain. Works for not does not work for ion. So works for strain and for stress.
Sure. Okay. That's actually what I was going to say is I would like a button maybe on the board or on the specific dial that would just clear circular tokens. Like a big end of round button or something. That would just clear off all the circular tokens. So that I wouldn't, or clear off circular tokens and dice. I don't know if we could detect them, mm-hmm. but just like a nice like end of round board wipe. Yep. Maybe even like would flip your tokens up as well. That's kind of what I want. Just a big old button that will just do all the end of round things for me automatically.
So Will, I've started playing Legion on Tabletop Simulator and they have that. So I assume mm-hmm. that is capable for X-Wing. Gets rid of all the necessary sure. tokens, maintains the ones that are supposed to stay, and mm-hmm. even flips things that would be necessary to flip.
So that sounds pretty good.
Sounds tasty.
Sounds like a challenge. Maybe they couldn't do that for X-Wing. Probably too crazy.
All right.
I actually got another one that's not that. Actually, real quick, I got another one that actually I have a really hard time with.
Okay.
I ended up just making it really bigger. It's just the turret arcs, especially uh-huh. like the single-sided turret arcs.
Yeah.
I have a really hard time seeing the direction of the arc, so I usually just you know hit the plus sign on them to make yeah. them bigger. But I mean, at some point, it's just, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, something that has like a turret indicator, whether, you know, a certain side of the base gets highlighted or something, just something to tell you which direction it is. Because a lot of the time I like, you know, since I'm more familiar with Vassal, like the view that I put normally is I just hit the up arrow. So I'm looking straight down and just zoom out. And I can never see where the arc is pointed. So then I have to like go in and zoom in or mouse over it to like see if I can figure it out. So yeah, some way to make it more distinguishable if there's a rotating arc, which way it's pointing.
So,
similar to Vassal, where you have that little blue, like that blue thing that hovers over the side that shows you where the arc is pointing.
Cool. All right, and then mine is more of a design thing. My instincts for like by the way, this button right here is genius. Like when I saw this set button that got placed inside the maneuver menu, whoever's idea was this, I want to kiss you. Like it's so good. Okay. But the one issue I have is when you flip the dial, you see how you have set. It's like that, but that was your maneuver button. It now says set. I flip. I want to be able to click right here in that same spot, basically where this number and the arrow is, in order to do the maneuver. But that shows you what the template is, and to move, you do the bottom one. Like, that's fine. I just feel like the biggest button should be the move thing, and instead make this button down here, like TEM for like template, and have this be the movement. Have that one be it. And sure, you can keep your undo button up there. But yeah, that is the one thing that's like, oh man, that's what I would do. So so Crazy Vulcan, if you know somebody, talk to them about it. Like, I think that would just be a quality of life improvement, because it'd be so much faster, right? Set, ready, flip, and you're there already, and it's the biggest button. All right. But anyway, like that's the one thing I'd change. It's great. I love TTS, and I'm really excited. And it's always improving, which is great. Like, I stayed away from TTS at first because it seemed really janky, I'll be honest, at first. Like, when I first saw it, which was maybe a year and a half ago, was the first time I saw it. And I was like, I'm not playing X-Wing on this. I only did Vassal. And the amount of work that's been put in is great. It's really, really great. So thank you to everybody who does the work on that.
Yeah, it's intimidating at first, but the more you play it, the more simpler it feels.
All right. Well, let's keep moving down here. So the question of the week also comes from Davin Felt, and this is a brain breaker a little bit. A little bit of a philosophical base, I think, to it as well. The question is, do you think the switch to more online X-Wing during this pandemic will be a good or a bad thing for the game, and why? Who wants the cookie first? Who wants to go grab the carrot?
Right, William, go ahead.
Okay, fair enough. So, will it be good or bad for the game? I have to believe that it will, in comparison, be better for the game. We're still keeping people interested. We're still talking about X-Wing. We're still getting that content out to listeners and viewers. So people are thinking about it. They want to play in advance, and it is still providing that kind of like gathering together, that community aspect that a lot of people will stay in X-Wing for, right? They get teased by the beautiful ships, and then they realize that they can be part of something much larger than just their kitchen table. So overall, if we did not have these online tools, I think there would have been a lot of players who would have just, boxed up their X-Wing collection, set it aside, dealt with the more pressing issues, and then in the future, when they would be able to go to a game store, they maybe not reach for that X-Wing box, right? Maybe they reach for a different game or something. So keeping that X-Wing in their mind throughout these times would be, I can imagine, better for the game had we not had these online tools.
All right. Ryan.
I mostly agree that it's maintaining the interest It's still getting people to play games with each other. It probably is actually interconnecting people even more because you can play virtually. You don't have to wait for big events and see if you have the travel money. You have the opportunity to play with more people around the world. Time zones make it a little more difficult to get to schedule or random chance games with people within certain time zones. But I've played in a few events online now that I've, you know, had to schedule games for people in middle of Europe. Like, I probably would never have ever played them unless it was Worlds or online.
Yeah.
So the interconnectivity is really cool, and we're definitely seeing more of a large increase in the amount of people online, which in a way can bring the community even closer. Maybe not physically, but at least talking and communicating, which I think is really good right now. I do get how potentially some people could just decide that this is a digital game, that they're just going to stick with that and maybe never jump on the physical aspect of it and collecting the models. Or maybe it's not that drastic. Maybe it's just, you know, I'm only going to collect the physical models for this faction that I mainly play. But if I ever try something, I'll try it online first and see if I like it enough to buy it, which may hurt the bottom line dollar of FFG and the mouse. And that's a lot of people have been talking about in the chat, their concern of if it gets too big, the mouse might notice it, and then we have to maybe might lose it in some capacity. I think I would hope and think that that is far, far away from the eyes of the mouse that they would think it's threatening enough to them.
Marcel.
I think it's by far a positive. I think the positives outweigh the negatives by a long mile, similar to some of the things that Ryan and William already said, mostly the interconnectivity. Right now I am in, Jank Tank Open aside, I'm doing another three or four online tournaments, like one game a week type of tournaments. A couple of them are in Europe. One of them is from a group that they invited me to from Kentucky and Indiana. And I was like, oh, okay, locals from Kentucky and Indiana. Well, turns out my match tomorrow is with a guy from Mexico City that kind of also invited to that tournament. So same thing. It's, I'm lucky enough and we're lucky enough that we travel to enough international and national level events that we get to meet a ton of people already. But sometimes that, you know, might be able to take that for granted, that that's not the norm for the, you know, for the thousands and thousands of X-Wing players. It's just right. A handful that get to do that. And with online, those people that don't get to travel to Worlds or Euros or Australia or, Brazil or anywhere else, you get to, or Argentina, you get to play them now, and there's plenty of that going around. And I think once it goes back to, you know, going back to system opens are back on and the main events are back on, you're still going to get, you know, the exposing more people to Vassal and exposing more people to Tabletop Simulator can only be a good thing, even in that situation, because now people that don't have the ability to practice between between tournaments, because they don't have, you know, they're in the middle of, you know, Montana or something, and there's not a huge X-Wing community there, they're going to get exposed to this, and there's going to be more people available for them to play against. And when they do make it to those tournaments, they're not going to feel like the odd man out, where, you know, they're, you know, you, we've all been there, where we show up to a tournament for the first time and we don't know anybody, and, you know, it's going to break that. It also helps. It's kind of like breaking that ice. I don't think it'll ever replace playing on a board and meeting people and going to a tournament. I mean, everybody who plays X-Wings, or 99% of the people who play X-Wing plays X-Wing because we're nerds and we like playing
right.
with plastic toys, and we like the ships, and we like looking at them, and we like painting them, and we like doing silly things with them, and we like, you know, being around people. I don't see how this can be negative, with the exception of, again, Ryan mentioned it. If it gets to the point where mouse makes some noise, but even then, there's always workarounds. Like, yeah, they have bigger fish to fry than, you know, a few hundred or a few thousand people playing a game that they're eventually going to spend money on to buy the toy store anyway online.
Hopefully. And yeah, that's that is, I mean, most likely, right? And I think one of the best examples, which I think we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, and I know that X-Wing is not as big as Magic, but my understanding is that they have Magic online, and that's completely free to play. I don't know how the collectible card aspect of it, how the, all that works, but you know, the online presence of that game keeps the game in the forefront of people's mind, right? And the easier it is for people to play, then maybe it just it allows people to play a little bit more. And I guess somebody's saying it's not exactly free anymore. Maybe some some parts of it. But now we talked about this week. Like maybe TTS will be a or Vassal, right? Either one will be a bridge to maybe FFG trying to link up officially with one of these things and trying to get something out there. Because one of the things about TTS, which I'm going to go ahead and flip over to my TTS view here really, really quickly. Okay. One of the things I notice is that when you go to games, there are games that you can buy in Tabletop Simulator. These are publishers that have created mods in TTS that people can pay for and play. So it is a potential, you know, a potential route that FFG can take to make it official. I know that there's probably some licensing deal stuff with like EA, but I mean, I think anything can be solved, right? You just gotta figure it out. But that's not for us to figure it out. That's obviously that's FFG's FFG's thing. But I think it's time to list of the week. Are we ready? Are you guys ready? Let's do it. You can hear them cheering in the background, just waiting. All right. Here we go. List of the week. Marcel, you are going first since I got your beautiful face on the screen.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Caleb's so
cracking up over there at something.
I gotta give the intro, man. So this comes from Town. It's for First Order Squad. And this is the notes that we got. It says, I've had an odd amount of success with this list. I would guess that I've just gotten lucky, but it's still pretty fun. And it is Lieutenant Dormitz in the Upsilon class shuttle with biohexacrypt codes and General Hux's crew, which, by the way, General Hux's crew says, while you perform a white coordinate action, you may treat it as red. If you do, you may coordinate up to two additional ships of the same type. So, you know, three for the price of one there. And each ship you coordinate must perform the same action, treating it as red. And then you pair that, he has that paired with, that with three Omega Squadron Expert TIE-SFs. Those are the initiative threes with crack shot and cluster missile. Marcel, take it away.
Show. All right. I like the idea that I'm trying to get the screen up with the most current here. Can you share it on your screen so I can see what the changes that you're making?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. So what? Basically put them all the way up front and Alpha Strike. One of the things that is missing from the ability to do that in a truly efficient and effective way is that one card that allows you to place your ships at a different initiative, which you don't have to search for it because it's too expensive and it's not worth it and we're not going to add it, so don't worry about it. But yeah, I mean, that's really what's going to allow you to really set yourself up to joust, put them really far ahead and then be able to fly forward after a triple coordinate to, you know, three focuses. So having said that, let's break out the rest of the list. He's got cluster missiles and crack shots. Crack shots are only on the primary arc. I mean, on the primary shot. They don't trigger off of secondary weapons. So let's just start off by knocking that out. And since we don't have a way of putting our ships at initiative 7, because we don't, you know, we don't have the points to put that upgrade on, dormant becomes dormant. We don't need dormant. Let's put the only one that matters. I'll let you pick for me. Yeah.
Tabson.
So Lieutenant Tabson, yeah. And actually that works out really well because with Biohex and the ability to coordinate at long distances, that means you don't really need to be at range to get that critical thing to where if you end up splitting your ships around a little bit and somebody takes a shot at Tabson, you can still coordinate a ship that might be on the other edge of the board and set that ship up for, you know, a good cluster missile attack or something. But that this leaves you with 12 points. And for one of the nice things about this list is the ability that it can shoot twice and it has multiple mods and really trying to get as much juice out of all these attacks as possible. So the thing that I would add to all of these is advanced optics. Put advanced optics on all of them so that way you have, you know, focus, blanks, you know, you have many different ways to end up with two or three hits on any given attack. And also keeps these ships still being able to be pretty efficient in their attack output, even if they don't get the target lock for the missiles. You can also go with passive sensors, but that kind of defeats the purpose. The other way would be passive sensors and concussion missiles on all of them. So you can go passive sensor concussion missiles on all three and still end up at 200 because passive sensors is 1 point cheaper than advanced optics. Concussion is 1 point higher than clusters. Or you can go with clusters and advanced optics. I kind of like this one because that way if you end up, if you get the opportunity, you get the chance to take multiple shots and just get more out of these things. And the other benefit of this, even though they're not using any EPTs, is that everybody's initiative 3. So then you have the ability to move in any way that you want, where Lieutenant Dormant is initiative 2, and then you would be like forced to bump him into the rest of your ships if he was behind, where now you can make a clearing for Tavson to complete his maneuvers.
Awesome. There you go. I mean, that sounded pretty self-explanatory there. Tavson, Biohex, and General Hux, and then 3 Omega Squadron Expert SFs with Cluster Missile and Advanced Optics.
And based on your flavor, either that or passive sensors with concussion missiles. So they're the same points, but it's the same concept.
All right, so our next squad is going to be from Ryan. Let's go ahead and throw it up here. It's an Imperial squad. And there's a lot here in the description. Basically, the theme is 5 guys, bombers, and TIEs. Yes, 5 guys is in the burger chain and the parameters. Since he said, like, hey, you wanted parameters, here's some parameters. It has to be 5 ships. They have to be composed entirely of ships that are TIEs, so some type of TIE something. At least 2 of them need to be bombers, and they need to be male and or not named pilots, since they're 5 guys. All right, Ryan. Good luck.
Yeah, so...
So let's start by reading it down. What do we got in there?
Yeah, so I looked at this, and especially with that description, took it as almost like a little bit of a challenge to see if I can make it on a competitive level. But as a starting point, we have Major Reimer with proton rockets and advanced proton torpedoes. We have Captain Jonas with advanced proton torpedoes, skilled bombardier, proximity mines, and proton bombs. An Intimidation Black Squadron Ace, Valen Rudor, and Mauler Mythal. So I do agree the two bombers probably are Reimer and Jonas. I played around with Deathfire a bit, but maintaining Reimer. But let's, because this is so specific, I probably need to, I definitely need to change. My final result isn't too crazy, but let's first just start, drop all upgrades off the bombers first.
All right.
Kind of go through the process I went through. So I feel Jonas was pretty overloaded in that, and he's pretty efficient by himself with barrage rockets. He and obviously other friendly ships could take advantage of that, but the main focus, and I think actually Jonas with barrage rockets in an extended list, just as like a filler. I mean, it's 53 points. It's filler-ish. That's a very consistent three-dice shot, and it doesn't get advantage of the range three bonus on the defense side. And then try to play around with Major Reimer stuff. And this is where, when I looked at Valen Rudor, I'm like, huh, it could be interesting if Valen Rudor took squad leader. Because I recently played around with utilizing the coordinating in a later state of the round to benefit a barrel roll link to target lock, which the TIE bombers natively have. So if a, and for people who aren't aware, they haven't seen Valen Rudor too much, it says after a friendly ship at range 0-1 defends, after the damage is resolved, if any, you may perform an action, which ideally he would coordinate a barrel roll, which is on Valen Rudor's action bar and is on the bomber's action bar, and then the bomber can then decide to link it to a target lock, which then leads to Major Reimer, who could take a focus on his action and then utilize either one of these two munitions that I've equipped to him. I went with cluster missiles, since that is the most flexible for him, and utilizing Jonas's ability for those rerolls makes the second cluster missile shot still pretty deadly. And then for the fun punch, the advanced proton torpedoes go back on Major Reimer, so we have that potential range 2-5 dice shot with Major Reimer's ability. And utilizing the, hey, and this is obviously a tight-ish formation. People are within range one of at least Valen Rudor. It's close enough to Reimer to make sure, like, hey, if you shoot any of my ships, Valen Rudor's ability is going to trigger, and I'm going to get that target lock in any which way I need to. And then it was filling out the last two ships. Let's swap out Mauler with Wampa. Give more of that difficult target priority. And
yeah, that's a great choice there. I like that.
Three-dice shot. And then with that, a lot of the more points left, it's kind of flavor to taste, but let's get rid of that Black Squadron TIE Fighter and change it to either a Planetary Sentinel Striker or an Alpha Squadron Pilot Interceptor. I like the Striker myself, but... yeah, whatever one you prefer. You're just adding another three-dice shot. But I thought it was really interesting to see how I could recreate that sort of later of engagement. Granted, you know, it's not start of engagement, but everything's already moved. Ships are now in range, and Valen Rudor can help make sure that a bomber could get that target lock. Granted, it would only be by taking the barrel roll link to lock action, because Valen Rudor doesn't natively have a lock. You could play around with dropping Wampa to a different fighter, or maybe dropping the Striker and Interceptor to another different named TIE fighter to put targeting computer on Valen Rudor. That's an option to invest instead of always force the barrel roll link to lock. You could just say, I'm going to squad leader the lock.
All right, there you go. And then last but not least, Will has another Empire list here. We got two Phantoms and a Defender. We got two Sigmas with crack shot and passive sensors. And those are the Initiative 4 Phantoms, and then Colonel Vessery and the Defender with heavy laser cannon and collision detector. There were no notes that came along with this list. So, Will, what are we going to do?
Well, here's the thing. That essentially
hey,
this,
bro.
List, this list could be good, but the points it's spending, or the things it's spending points on, don't really function as well as they could. So the idea is to get locks in combat and then give them to Vestry. Problem is that you don't get locks until you shoot, which means you won't have a target lock. Then you basically get to choose, are you giving it to yourself or are you giving it to Vestry? And I personally think the Phantoms are, unless you're like Whisper or really good at flying Echo kind of out to the side where she's not in the fight, it's difficult to fly them without like Fifth Brother to get those target locks, because you're not going to spend your evade on defense because that's your decloak. So you really don't have any defense. So you're really a 5 health, 2 agility ship out there with nothing to defend, which is not good. You should not spend 50 points on that. If you got some other coordinating, some shenanigans, it might work. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep this as a Vestry list, and we're going to take out those Phantoms. What we want is ships with not passive sensors. We want ships with fire control system, because we want to keep our locks so that Vestry can shoot. But I'm going to... I want to talk about another option to get target locks, and you can just take those upgrades off of them. Vestry is pretty good with his free focuses and free locks. He doesn't need upgrades too much. If you got points for him, sure. So one line of thinking of it is you can add a Lambda, Colonel Jenden with Krennic. This would be if you are trying to get Vestry to work. This is a great starting point. Jenden can get his own lock for Dr. Krennic.
Dr. Krennic, please report.
Yeah. So he can get his own lock for Krennic, and there's beautiful synergy there between Krennic and Vestry, because Krennic has to have the lock to work. Vestry wants to shoot at things that have then the optimized prototype, so he's getting a lock benefit, and you can then also use the benefits that optimized prototype gives you as well. I kept getting like a 201 list when I kept doing that. I was looking at a couple different things, Redline, Darth Vader, a couple other things you can try to sneak in there. But ultimately, I didn't like it. I think Jenden's kind of a crutch. We got to get away from Jenden.
Put him away.
This combo is really good, and it definitely is worth exploring, but we're not going to do it in this one. So I think I just put Jenden in Jenden or Syed every one of my Imperial list. So let's delete them. Let's not do that. Let's go back to what I was saying about we want to keep locks on the board, and the best way to keep locks on the board is fire control system. So we're actually going with X1s. Which is going to be Darth Vader and probably Merrick. I'm going to actually ask you this question. So let's put a fire control system on them. So they don't want to spend their locks. They do shoot before Vestry. So they don't want to spend their locks. They want to let Vestry get them when he attacks. So I'm going to throw this to you guys out to you. Ved Foslow, who's got the best X1 dial, and maybe one of the best Imperial dials, period, is only 1 point cheaper than an I-5. Is Merrick worth giving up all those dials just for I-5?
I don't know. I haven't seen Ved Foslow almost anywhere. And that's not to say it's good or bad or more valuable than the next. It's like a try and see what happens.
Yeah, Ved Foslow says when you would reveal a dial, you can do one higher. You can execute that maneuver one speed higher or lower. So you can get 3 talon rolls or excuse me, you take the threes down to two. You got a bunch more blues. You got hard ones. What's the blue they get? They get three bank blue, four forward blue, one forward blue, and he can use this ability at I4.
Three bank blue. The only
reason, yeah, three bank blue. So that's the 5 and 3K. So many more maneuvers, and the only reason I bring him up because I generally think Merrick is better, just to pick up locks. The focus linked barrel rolls, things of that nature. But Ved Fossil is worth mentioning in this combination because he can shoot after Vessery to try to put the crit through, or if you plan on spending the entire lock anyways, you can just shoot after Vessery. That would also give you a 1 point bid for the list. If you're like, I'm not flying an I6 without a bid, I guess that's how you have to get it, is going with the Ved Fossil.
All right. Yeah. I do like the Ved choice there. I think maybe people just haven't given him a chance. They're scared of that I-4.
I-4 is not that bad. You have a low bid, though, too, that might be the icing on the cake there, that little one-point bid.
All right. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed that list of the week segment. I do need to cut the podcast off here, though, because tomorrow is my daughter's birthday, and I need to help wrap some presents and get some things ready. That little girl, she's asleep, I hope, and we can do all the sneaky stuff right now. So thank you, everybody, for watching. I will be taking tomorrow off when it comes to answering questions for the Space Jam. So hopefully you got all your questions in today. And thank you, everybody, for your support. Again, if you have questions about the Space Jam, send it to GoldSquadronPodcast@gmail.com. Yes, we will be streaming the event. It'll be live on our Twitch channel. If you have any concerns at all, just go ahead and send it over. Please read the material. Look at your email if you haven't read it. There's five people left. Five people who haven't done through all the stuff. All right? Five people. So hopefully we can get them all set up. So thank you, everybody, for your support and for listening. Gold Squadron out.